Let's go to the big house.
KCLR.
A series exploring the families and events of Carlow's old gentry houses.
Passing an old stately home conjures in my head all sorts of majestic interiors, verdant lawns and exciting stories. I often think, I'd love the opportunity of living in a house like that. Tom Cox did.
I was born in Fenna. Just below the Hunter's Rest here. Born in the house, actually. And that was a small house, two bedrooms and upstairs and a kitchen and scullery. My father worked in Evergreen here for William Murphy and John Murphy. And that place was sold in 1960. And we moved then from Fenna to Dunlickney Manor. I remember going with my brother Mick, I think it was, and we drove the cow. We had a cow from Fenna to Dunlickney, and it was my first time to see Dunlickney Manor. Coming up the avenue with a black and white cow, it wasn't a Friesian either, it was a big heavy cow, a great milker, and this big castle. It was a massive big granite building, and it was like a castle to me, you know. But some of it was in wilderness, but it was a brilliant place to play, and cowboys and Indians or anything like that was absolutely, or hide and seek, you know, you were never caught, and you could fool the person that was in the den the whole time, you know. And it was a brilliant place to play, and anyone that of my school friends came out, they loved coming out there as well because of the freedom in the place.
Nowadays, Tip the Can is more popular than cowboys and Indians.
The person that's on is at the can, and they have to count. And if he says no fleas or bugs are in the can, you're not allowed to go around the can. And the hiders can say no babies sitting, no laying eggs. That means you can't stay at the can the whole time. And the hiders have to run out and hide somewhere. Then they can just run out of their hiding spot, and then they have to go to the can and say, "Tip the can, I free all."
Another source of great joy for the young Tom were the gardens at Dunlickney Manor.
There were glass houses at the back. I could sow and experiment. I experienced growing tomatoes and cucumbers, which were foreign to us nearly then, you know. The orchard had all kinds of fruit in it and all varieties of apples and pears and peaches and grapes. There was a greenhouse there and the grapes in it, and of course, apart from the strawberries and the raspberries and all the different herbs as well, and rhubarbs and all that. And there was a mushroom house. Now, I never seen a mushroom growing in it, but it was a dark house.
Dunlickney Manor was one of the homes of the Bagnall family, and they have a fascinating story. Back in the 1500s, one man killed another man, but got pardoned by the king, became really wealthy, and then bought one of the seven baronies of Carlow.
Nicholas Bagnall fled England after killing a man in a brawl, and he became a mercenary under Con Bacoch O'Neill, chief of the O'Neills of Tyrone. Through the influence of O'Neill, Nicholas got a general pardon of all murders and felonies by him committed, granted by Henry VIII. As a result, Nicholas later, around 1552, was granted Newry Castle, County Down. He then became quite a wealthy man, and he bought the barony of Idrone for his son Dudley from the Carew family in 1585.
At that time, Carlow was divided into seven baronies, and the Carews owned and ruled the baronies of East and West Idrone in a peaceful manner, keeping on good terms with their powerful neighbours, the Cavenaghs of Borris. Dudley Bagnall, the new owner, was a different kettle of fish, however.
Dudley was a different character. He came and immediately started a feud with the Cavenaghs. Out in Garry Hill, where there was a Cavenagh fort, he killed the elderly man of the Cavenagh family who was there, who happened to be the chief at the time. And some time later, the Cavenaghs retaliated and killed Dudley in Ballymoon.
And there was more deaths to come.
His son, Nicholas, succeeded to the estate. But Nicholas then got involved in a duel in Dublin, and that ended his life, actually.
What a start for a family that ultimately gave their name to Bagnallstown.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to describe Bagnallstown to me?
Well, there's around like four shops,
You had a park. There's a fire station, police station. It's like the main town in the area. There's not much other big towns around. And there's lots of schools there. And there's a church there. And there's Super Value and Aldi.
Here's the old wall coming right up along here now as you're coming. And all of that land to our right and to our left.
Miles Kavanagh, retired school principal and historian, takes me from Bagnall's town centre to see Dunleckney Manor.
But we'll stop and get out here and have a view of the house. There's a three-storey granite ashlar Tudor Revival country house. The interior of the house has a fine plaster fan vaulting in the late perpendicular Gothic style. And it has an elaborate wooden staircase which incorporates a number of medieval wooden carvings rescued actually from St. Canice's Cathedral in Kilkenny.
I remember the inside of our end of it. I would imagine it was the maid's quarters or something like that, but our kitchen was panelled with timber, so that our little Stanley cooker, it took very little firing to heat the whole room, and it was a big kitchen. But it was well insulated with the panels on the wall, timber panels, but of course it would have been quite dangerous if it caught fire in that. But it was very, very warm and cosy. We had about 10 rooms at the back. And we had a big kitchen and a big, it was a storeroom for us, and a playroom. But it was terrazzo floors in it. The skirting boards or the skirting was terrazzo as well. So it were very, very expensive built. And on the wall there was about, I'd say, 20 bells, of which we often made use of ourselves to take them down for experiment. But they were the bells that were used by the people in the rooms that rang for service from the maids. But we had loads of room in it, you know, loads of room in it.
We're going to go right up here above Nowy Road and come around towards the back of Dunleckney, where is the cemetery.
A Protestant and Catholic church are situated side by side in Dunleckney Cemetery, which was a part of the original estate.
Both of these date back into the 1700s, and both of them moved into the main town in Bagnallstown in the early 1800s. As you can see, the finer building is the church. Is the Church of Ireland? Is the Church of Ireland building, and the structure of the Catholic Church would be a much older one.
So he was buried in the Church of Ireland.
The Irish Bagnalls were originally a Catholic family.
They changed yeah, before that. Yeah. No, the Bagnalls in England changed to the Protestant religion at that time, but the Catholic family of the Bagnalls here remained strong, and strong in their faith as well. And when Cromwell came, George's son Thomas was deported to Connacht for his part in the Catholic rebellion. Now, Thomas's elder brother, Colonel Walter Bagnall, he was executed in the parade in Kilkenny in 1652 for his part in the Catholic rebellion. And he was executed by Cromwell's soldiers then. And at that time, as a result of the Catholic rebellion and Bagnall's part in it, and of their opposition, you could say, to Cromwell as well, they lost all their estates. They lost the whole barony of Idrone.
They ultimately got their lands back, but lost them again, reclaiming them only once they had changed their religion to Protestant, while under the tenure of Dudley Bagnall. A different Dudley now to the one already mentioned. Names seemed to run in families then, not like today when names follow fashion trends.
There is three of us in the school called Jack. No, there's four. There's two Hannahs, two Eves,
two Aidens.
I was called Eve. My mum was reading a story, and the hero in the story, her name was Eve, and she actually told herself that day, if I ever have a baby girl, I'll call her Eve, because she liked what the person in the story did. And a few days later, she was pregnant. Wow. So
Beauchamp Bagnall got his name from his mother too. He was the son of Walter Bagnall and Elizabeth Beauchamp, and he was a character.
Beauchamp, probably the most well-known Bagnall of them all. Well-known for his episodes abroad. He liked the ladies. He liked dueling. He liked the good life. He toured a lot, spent a lot of money, lost 32,000 acres as a result of his flamboyant lifestyle. He was a character and was fond of dueling, and it said in his later years that he would, as he was getting older, he would rest most of the duels around here were either fought in Killinane graveyard or Dunleckney graveyard itself, and he would rest against a headstone while taking part in the duel.
What is a duel?
It's like just a fight.
If, like, say I was queen and, well, it doesn't really work with females, it's normally males, so like king, they'd normally, if maybe they think that he wasn't a good enough leader or whatever, they'd probably, somebody might challenge him to a duel, and they just, whoever won really took the throne. So,
or maybe if the king, like, recently died and he had two sons and they were both meant to become king, but there's only meant to be one, they have to fight for their place as king.
What would they use?
You'd probably have iron swords, and you'd have a shield with something painted, the crest of
lots
the...
Lots of armour.
Yeah, lots of armour.
I wonder then if the suit of armour in Dunleckney Manor was a homage to Beauchamp Bagnall's duelling days.
The main house, there was a big, and still is of course, a big granite stairs in it, but when you come up and turned around at the top of the stairs, the landing, go to crossing, there was two big suits of armour there. Now, they were made from, they weren't made from actual steel, but they were made from very, very concentrated or very condensed cardboard of some description. But you could get into those and actually have sword fights, and they had actually mock swords in it, you know, so it was, you were like Don Quixote or something like that.
Though Tom was only play duelling, Beauchamp Bagnall was at it for real, and for all sorts of reasons.
They had a farm in Eastwood House. And in the farm, they had a large amount of pigs. And one day, seemingly, the pigs strayed onto Bagnall's farm. And Beauchamp wasn't very happy about that when it was reported to him. So he ordered his workers to cut the tails of the pigs off and send them back to Weld. Weld was not very happy with this, and he challenged Beauchamp to a duel. And the duel was agreed, and they met, and Joseph Weld took his chance and fired. Bagnall refused to fire and accused him of assault. Took him to court, won his case in court, and Joseph Weld was sent to prison for 1 month. So he had a reputation of being a great duelist, but when he met up against this man Weld in his latter days, I'm not sure why, perhaps maybe because Joseph was an archdeacon, that he didn't fancy shooting an archdeacon. I'm not so sure. But that actually happened, because I have read it in a London newspaper, I think it was the London Gazette of that time.
As can be seen, Beauchamp Bagnall had a very eccentric side, but it didn't stop him from becoming a Member of Parliament.
Beauchamp Bagnall first became a Member of the Irish Parliament when he was elected for Enniscorthy in County Wexford in 1761. And in 1768, he was elected to Parliament for County Carlow. As an MP, he did tremendous work and constantly supported all Catholic relief bills as a politician. He strongly supported the Catholics and the people. And you could say, in a way, the whole family, just like what was said of the Normans, they became more Irish than the Irish themselves. He was present in the House of Commons on the 16th of April 1782 when Henry Grattan made his famous speech that is often referred to as the Irish Declaration of Independence. Now, Beauchamp had three children. He had Catherine, Amelia and a son, Walter. But Walter had no children. So apart from those three children, there were others knocking around as well. He was very fond of one of these, and was quite well known. Her name was Sarah Westrop, and he favoured her very much. Sarah married Philip Newton, and as a result, he left all his estate to Sarah Westrap, who was married to Philip Newton. And then Sarah and Philip's eldest son, Walter Newton, inherited Dunleckney. And it was he set the plans for the present Tudor and Gothic mansion, drawn up by the architect Daniel Robertson. And Philip died in 1853. But Sarah and Philip's son, Philip Jocelyn Newton, assumed the name of Bagnall and was responsible for the completion of the Dunleckney Manor. And here we have the, in loving memory of Philip Jocelyn Newton, who died April the 20th, 1895. He wanted a very plain headstone, but I think it's not very plain, it's rather unique.
Yeah, it is, it's lovely.
Over time, the Newton family line was replaced by the Vesey or Vesey family at Dunleckney Manor.
The Vesseys replaced the Newtons, who had replaced the Bagnalls. And during the Bagnall period of time in Dunleckney, the Bagnalls were quite familiar with the local tenants. A number of local tenants and their workers had houses close to the manor itself. And of course, most of these houses were mud cabins. But when the Newtons took over, they wanted more privacy and started to move the tenants and place them in other houses on the estate further distant from the manor. When the Vesey family came in, Sidney Vesey discontinued the farming on the estate and he leased out the fields for 11 months each year. Right across the road here in front of us now, we have a tenement house, and in it lives Richard Sheen, who has been the major source of all my knowledge. And for generations before him, members of his family had worked on the Bagnall and Newton estate, and also Richard himself as a boy was employed as a houseboy and garden boy to the family that lived in it at that time, and that was Tom and Margaret Donnelly.
But Richard also has some memories of Mrs. Vesey.
He has a great memory of her and her great big Armstrong Siddeley car. It was a beautiful black and blue, and he said he still can picture it today, with gold lining around it and with chrome headlamps and all the car shining, and she sitting up in the back like a queen, he said. And during the winter time and the cold weather time, she would place her feet in a foot muff and wrap her body in a rug. Bill Foster, her chauffeur, who came from Abbey Leaks, he would pick her up at the front door and take her to her destination. And at Christmas time, he would bring her to buy presents in Dublin's Grafton Street.
Richard was at one Christmas party in 1931 and he received a toy bugle as his present. Mrs. Blanche Vesey sold Dunleckney Manor when her husband died, and this ushered in the Donnelly era at the house.
Thomas Donnelly was a spirit merchant, a wine importer from Belfast in Antrim. He was also in the distillery business. Now, Thomas and his wife Margaret modernised the house and put in a terrazzo floor in the entrance hall. And at one stage during the stay of the Donnelly family, they employed over 30 workers. And those were working in the house, in the garden, at stables and with horses. The garden featured prominently now at this time, with all kinds of produce being grown and transported to Dublin. Flowers were grown and were available for purchase at the house. One day of each week, Richard Sheen, the then houseboy and garden boy, delivered to Mrs. Donnelly a fresh load of flowers from the garden, and they were placed on display in each room of the house, and this added to the ambience. Hunting and horse riding also played a prominent part in the lifestyle at this time. The family and children were competent horse riders, and they bred well-known thoroughbreds of that time, which include Pink Larkspur and Drawbridge. And for one of the big races of that time, Thomas Donnelly brought over from America the famous jockey Johnny Longdon to ride one of the family horses in a big race.
In 1958, the Donnellys left the house, and so we come full circle back to Tom Cox and the times when the Keenan brothers farmed the land and used Dunleckney Manor.
Keens were only interested really in the land. No one lived in it apart from, let's say, people who actually worked on the farm. There was ourselves and Mick O'Hara and his wife Joan. They're the parents of O'Hara Brewing Company. There was a person, Peter Reedman, he lived in it. He was an engineer from England, and Terry Would. And John Keane, as I say, he lived in it for a while too, before his house was built. So it was used as a company house, if you know what I mean. Keenans, I think they came to Bagnestown in the 1950s. They originally were working in Belfast in a foundry, and they moved down to Bagnestown, down to, as we call it, Lawler's Lane there. And they had a foundry going there. And, well, sure, it grew and grew and grew. There was three brothers, Dick, Paddy and Johnny. And they came originally from Ballyroan Leash and progressed, and they became one of the biggest industrial giants of the 60s and 50s and 60s in the construction industry. Farm buildings, of course, is what their landmark really in the country is, Keane Brothers, Bagnestown. And they were fantastic employers. I remember listening to their radio programme back in the early 60s, and they were a household name for farmers as regards farm buildings and all that. They lasted until 1982 in Bagnestown. But Dick, one of the brothers, had set up his own company in Burris prior to that. And that's still going strong today. And Ger, his son, is the CEO down there. And they are an international firm now, famous for their diet feeder.
When the Keenan brothers' business in Bagnestown was dissolved, the estate was divided up among the family, with the Dunleckney Manor section passing to the Hughes family. Jim Hughes built a house for his family in a field on the farm, and he continued to farm the land. Mailer and Loretta Colleton from Wexford bought the manor then in 1980, and they carried out some restoration and operated it as a bread and breakfast business.
What a fantastic history for one house. And it's a story that's set to continue as the house is currently owned by the Sheehan family and is beautifully refurbished and maintained.
KCLR.
Let's go to the big house. Produced by Monica Hayes and funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.